Good morning. How you guys doing? Good to see y'all. Yeah, it's pretty close, but I think 9:30 whooped y'all pretty good, I'll be honest. Early to bed, early to rise, you know what they say. Y'all excited to be here today? I'm glad that y'all are here. Few things that I want to go through before I get started. Y'all okay with that? Thank you, because you don't have a choice. I got the mic. We are at two services. Thank you, Lord. Our children's people are not crying after every service. I'm glad. Yes, thank you, three people who clap. It's awesome. But also, we've had a competition to see who's going to post the most about our two times to choose. So can y'all give Jordan a hand as he comes up here and lets us know what's going on with that?
What's up, everybody? Cool. Well, I'll make this super quick. Over the past couple weeks, thank y'all so much for listening to me. And we were talking about going to two services because, you know, I wanted you guys to actually feel like you had a part to play in ministry. And so by simply posting on your Facebook and being part of this, I think you have friends and family that see what you do and see how awesome your church is and may come with you, which could change your lives. So that's pretty cool. We had a contest going, so whoever had, like, the most likes and the most shares, and we had a couple people that really, really stood out, and one family that had like the most, one of the best pictures ever. We're gonna share it on the church's Facebook. The Doucette family, oh my goodness, like there's like, what, 12 y'all? I lose count. 13? No, I'm sorry, there's not that many. And so the Doucette family had this amazing picture that we're gonna share. And it honestly looks like it could go on the front like JCPenney's fall catalog. Like, it's amazing. They're adorable. And so we're sending them out on a night on the town. It took like, I know, so they're going to go to Outback and then go to a movie, but it took like 8 gift cards to send all y'all to the movie. So wow, that was tough. And so we just love you guys and thank everybody for sharing and posting. And we're in two services now. So awesome. Love y'all.
Y'all give them a hand. Wait up, Jordan. Don't go anywhere. Can y'all give Jordan a hand too? He's a lot of fun. We love him. Also, he's wearing this awesome shirt, which represents Color for a Cure, which is a color run that I believe is next Saturday, right? And we are selling shirts to benefit more than just the color run, the family that it's affected. PH is pulmonary hypertension, and it's an incurable disease. Seldom does it afflict kids, but a good friend of Lisa and ours, their son, Joel, who's almost 5 now, has PH. And the doctors have said, unless there's a miracle, they're done with their medication. And unless God shows up, the prognosis is grim. And so they did last year the color run to benefit PH, the PH Foundation. And they had almost 3,000 runners. They're anticipating even more this year. If you haven't signed up, you need to run. It's going to be fun. It was a blast. We had all of our kids go through. It was a lot of fun. If you've never done a color run, this is a great one. The sale of these shirts, which they're right out here in the foyer, y'all need to buy one. It goes directly to Josh and Lindsay Belt, because though they have insurance, their medical costs are about $50,000 right now, and he's an associate pastor at Our Savior's Church in Jennings. They need some help. So this is a great way to actually get a really cool a really cool shirt that, where's Miss Amber? I know she's around here somewhere. She designed it. Y'all give her a hand. It's pretty awesome. She designed it. She printed them. She did a great job with it. So y'all check that out. Thank you, Jordan. God bless you guys. I'm excited about this morning, too, starting a new series out of the book of Daniel called Stand. And just a few weeks ago, God just put it in my heart, just one word. It wasn't stand. It was boldness. And, like, this doesn't count, because you may say, well, you're a pastor. Like, you get paid to be bold. I'm like, well, no, boldness is it's not that. I just said, Lord, I just want to be bold, and everywhere that I go, I want to unabashedly tell people how great you are. I just want to be bold. And God just spoke something to me. For transparency's sake, he spoke it to me this morning, and I wrote it down because I've been praying, Lord, make me bold, make me bold. And I was preparing for this message in this series out of the book of Daniel called Stand. This is what he gave me. He says, boldness comes from what's on the inside, not how we act on the outside. Because I think a lot of people here, you've probably said, I want to be more bold in my faith. Has anybody here ever said that? I want to be more bold in my faith. Like, and we think that that is an action. And I'm just telling you that it's more than that. It's way more than an action, that it's a heart that we have. Because boldness ultimately comes from the inside. And as we look at the book of Daniel, I'm just telling you, that's what we see. We see a man that God used to honestly, changed the course of human history because he was willing to take a stand. I think we look at one person and we say, well, there's no way that, like, I, as one person, could change the course of human history. And to even think that is audacious and perhaps a little arrogant, but I'm just telling you, I don't believe that it is. I mean, even recently, like, we've seen how one person can change the course of human history. Now, I'm a student of history. I love history. How many of you love history? Any history buffs here? Great, thank you. How many of you go, that's a bunch of dates and dead guys? Come on, be honest. Baby, you didn't raise your hand. We've had this discussion. I know. You like history now. Okay, good. She's saying that, so don't call her out. It's more than just dates and dead. The truth is history dates and dead guys? Is it? Of course it is. It is, but it's more than that because we can look to the past and recognize truth. Because everybody knows the adage, hindsight is 2020. That means that we can see things clearly when we look backwards. How many of you in your own life, you went through a season and you went like, oh, I see what I did there and that was dumb. Because hindsight's 2020, as we look back, we can see that same thing historically. But let me tell you what you'll find is person after person, when they make a stand, they change human history for good or for bad. I love World War II. I'm a World War II history buff. Both my grandfathers fought in World War II. One was with the 316th Troop Carrier Group. But he was a glider pilot, and a glider that housed, they could put a platoon of men, or you could put a howitzer, or you could put a jeep. And he trained with the 82nd Airborne. The glider pilots had the highest KIA rate in World War II, regardless of nation, regardless of branch, regardless of service. Over 70% of them did not come home. My grandfather came home. He credited Patton with that, by the way. And my grandfather on my mother's side was with the 3rd Infantry Division. And the 3rd Infantry Division was paramount in the Battle of the Bulge. If you don't know World War II history, and most people aren't up to speed on it, I recognize that. I want to remind you, we almost lost World War II. Like, we look back and go, yeah, that was the greatest generation ever, the World War II generation. Listen to me, we came really close to losing World War II. World War II wasn't as cut and dry and like, oh, that was a piece of cake. It was hard, guys. And it was a fight and it was a battle. I mean, come on, the course of human history was changed because one guy decided that it'd be really a good thing if he was in charge of one country. What was his name? Come on, everybody knows this. Adolf Hitler. One person changed the course of human history. On the eve of the close of World War II, Germany launched its greatest offensive to, hopefully, in their mind, put them back in a good military position to actually win the war. It started in December of 1944, carried through January of 1945. It was their offensive to really take back the Rhine Valley and to move back into France from which they had been driven. The 3rd Infantry Division was the tip of the spear. They were charged with holding the Rhine Valley in eastern France. And just, it's not going to be all boring. Each of the towns were strategic, but Colson was one of the most strategic. And just before Colson was a river town. I have to look at the name. It's Holzwehr, France. It was on the French side of the Rhine River. If that town fell, and if Germany's 2nd Mountain Division was able to pierce through, they were afraid that the whole 3rd Infantry Division would fall. One man brought victory. His name was Audie Murphy. Some of you may have heard that name before. Anybody heard of Audie Murphy? He was an actor, eventually, but he was just a kid from Hunt County, Texas. He grew up outside of Greenville. Y'all know where that is? Just outside of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Kid number 6 out of 12 kids. He wasn't the smartest, he wasn't the strongest, he wasn't the biggest. And in fact, he dropped out of school in 5th grade because they were having trouble feeding the family. So he got a job picking cotton. was born in 1924, so this was probably 1934. He was picking cotton, and he was hunting and he was fishing to help provide for his family. A few years later, bombing of Pearl Harbor, and like so many young men, he wanted to join the military. There was a problem, though. So he went to the recruiters in Greenville. The Marines turned him down, and so did the Navy, because he was only 5'5" and barely weighed 110 pounds. Nobody wanted him. So he went to the Army, and the Army took him. And he ended up being revered by his peers because everywhere that he went, he was on the front line willing to take a stand. Audie Murphy was a first lieutenant in Holzwitz, France, at the tip of the spear when Germany was pushing in to try and take France back and ultimately win the war. And let me just tell you, it was closer than people think. Historians let us know that, but the general population thinks, oh, we just destroyed Hitler and we destroyed the Japanese. And let me just tell you, it was very close. Audie Murphy was in charge of an entire company that was responsible for holding Holzwitz. As the Germans progressed, they went from an entire company that were decimated down to 19 men, one of which was Audie. He's a first lieutenant in charge of holding a town with 19 men because literally hundreds of men of his men have been killed. The Germans begin to advance. It's in the dead of winter. It's freezing cold. The Battle of the Bulge was horrific. My grandfather was with 3rd Infantry, and they wanted to amputate his feet because he had frostbite, and he told them no, and he lived to walk another day. It was a miserable existence. That was these 19 men. Imagine all of your buddies getting killed, and there's just a handful of you left, and they call in for reinforcements. There's none there, and they see the Germans on the way. As they start to cross in, there's two companies of Germans. Fresh, they didn't realize it, but they were fresh from Norway. It was the 2nd Mountain Division. Over 250 Germans and two Panzers tanks are progressing towards the bridge and their position. Their men only have two anti-tank trucks, and they only have their small arms. They fire the anti-tank rounds at the Panzers, but they've been heavily fortified, and they bounce off. One of the anti-tank vehicles falls into a ditch, and it's no longer good. Didn't seem to be doing much damage anyway. And so Audie, as commander, sends all of his men to retreat back into the woods. But he stays on the second anti-tank truck, and he mans a 50-caliber machine gun while he's on the phone calling in artillery coordinates. He took a stand that day. The Germans were decimated by one guy who refused to give up. The artillery took out both of the tanks, and single-handedly, Audie Murphy took out almost all of the Germans. For that, he received the Congressional Medal of Honor. He had previously received the Silver Star, the Bronze Star, multiple Purple Hearts. A guy that was a fifth grade dropout, 5'5", next to nothing, nothing to look at. But because he took a stand, the Germans did not invade France. One guy can make a difference. Do you believe that? Let me just tell you, I think many people don't believe that. They don't believe that one person can make a stand unless it's somebody else. That person can really do something that makes a difference. Has anybody here ever felt powerless? Have you ever felt like one person can't make a difference? I have. I'll be honest. Like, God, what do you have me doing? Like, what can I do? Because I feel like I can't do anything. And everything that I do try to do, like, nothing happens. Nobody's ever felt that way. I'm the only one. Come on. Has anybody felt like just powerless? Like, what I do doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. And I'm here to tell you that it does. And the reason for the next few weeks that we're going to be going through the book of Daniel is because Daniel is a man that God used to change the course of human history. That it's a phenomenal book. The reason that I want us to look at the book of Daniel is because, in many respects, it reflects, I believe, the current environment in which we find ourselves. Because as the book of Daniel opens, here's what we see. We see a nation that had once honored, loved, and served God. In fact, that was their foundation as a nation. God had brought them to the land of promise. And as long as they obeyed him and honored him and lived according to his ways, they were protected. I mean, God put a supernatural hedge of protection around them. Have you ever been caught in the rain, but you've got an umbrella? Isn't that a good feeling? Or you've like seen the rain coming and you've run somewhere where there's just a small cover and you've been able to wait it out. Has any of that ever happened to anybody? Isn't that a good feeling when you make it and you're like, man, I didn't, like the water's splashing all around you, but like I'd have been soaked if I'd have been out there. The nation of Israel stepped outside of the place that God had for them, and they did their own thing. Let me just tell you, God gives you the freedom to do what you want. God never forces anybody to do his bidding. God never forces anybody to serve him and honor him. It's a choice that we all have. But when you step out of the place that God has for you, you step into your own path. And if you're like me, your own path has taken you to some stupid places where you've been pounded by the rain. Yeah? That's where the entire nation was. They turned their back on God. So God gave them over. He let them to their own devices. And the king of Babylon, which was an empire that was expanding rapidly, came in and besieged the nation. In Daniel chapter 1, here's what we see. Verse 1 says, during the third year of King Jehoiakim's reign in Judah, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The Lord gave him victory over King Jehoiada of Judah and permitted him to take some of the sacred objects from the temple of God. So Nebuchadnezzar took them back to the land of Babylonia and placed them in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, his chief of staff, to bring to the palace some of the young men of Judah's royal family and other noble families who had been brought to Babylon as captives. Select only strong, healthy, and good-looking young men, he said. Make sure they're well-versed in every branch of learning and are gifted with knowledge and good judgment and are suited to serve in the royal palace. Train these young men in the languages and literature of Babylon. Y'all get what's going on here? The nation has been invaded by a foreign enemy. If you know history, you realize King Nebuchadnezzar was pretty vile in how he treated his enemies. Most of the nations, and he did with Israel ultimately, they sowed the land with salt so that they couldn't even produce grain for years. They couldn't farm it because the salt affected the soil to where nothing could be grown. He ultimately ends up destroying the temple. But he takes the best and the brightest from the noble families in Israel, and he brings them to Babylon. Now, here's the deal. We look at Daniel and his three friends that are taken. And I think men. Theologians and historians alike tell us they were probably boys between the ages of 12 and 15 years old. And they've been taken from their home, transported over 1,000 miles, and put in a program sponsored by the king of Babylon. Do you think that was hard for these boys? Because effectively, what did they become? I mean, if you're stolen from the place where you are and brought to another place to serve there, what have they become? They become what? They become prisoners. They become slaves. And this is a tough situation. It really and truly is. But how they respond is extraordinary. Because they were taken from their family 1,000 miles away to serve the king, to train in the language, the literature of Babylon. Look at verse 5. It says, and the king assigned them a daily ration of food and wine from his own kitchens. They were to be trained for 3 years, and then they would enter the royal service. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were four of the young men chosen, all from the tribe of Judah. The chief of staff renamed them with these Babylonian names. Daniel was called Belteshazzar. Hananiah was called Shadrach. Mishael was called Meshach. Azariah was called Abednego. Man, I love the book of Daniel. Because for me, it just paints such a clear picture of how the enemy operates and how we should respond. You know, Daniel actually is a book that's been fairly controversial because the first six chapters of Daniel, it's written by Daniel. They're him writing his story and his friend's story. It's the first six chapters. There's only 12 chapters, so chapters 7 through 12 are all about the prophecies, the visions that he sees and what they mean. The reason that the book is controversial is because many secular historians had said there's no possible way that it was written when it was written. No possible way, because it was written almost 600 years before Jesus. There's no possible way that it was written then, because he is describing this empire and this empire and this empire and this event and this person, and there's no way that he could have gotten all that right. And so the controversy is that the book of Daniel had to be written at a later date, probably around 300 AD. And many secular historians say that. But here's what's interesting to me. One of the greatest historians of all time and is referenced regularly, even in secular history, is a Jewish man by the name of Josephus. And Josephus records that this book, the book of Daniel, was actually shown to Alexander the Great, and Josephus helped him read through it, where it showed that Alexander the Great was mentioned in Scripture. And yet, secular historians don't want to believe that aspect of what Josephus wrote, even though they believe everything else. Am I getting a little too historical here? Here's my point. Like, the book of Daniel, while it may bring controversy to those who don't understand that it's true and that God can speak to the future in the present, it brings comfort to us as Christians because it confirms our faith. And let me just tell you, it is God who writes the future, but he writes it with people who are willing to make a stand. Did y'all get that? It is God who writes the future, but he writes it with people who are willing to make a stand. And as we study through the next few weeks, we see the stand that Daniel and his friends took. Actually, we even see it in this first chapter, because here's the tactic of the enemy. And it's not just for Daniel, it's for us today. Here's how the enemy operates. Anytime that he can get people to do these things, then he knows that he's got them. He wants to change as believers. Now I'm speaking to believers. I'm speaking to people who've surrendered their life to Christ. I'm speaking to the church at large. He wants to change the language. That's what we see in verse 4? That they were to be trained in the language and the literature of Babylon. Here's the enemy's tactic and plan for people, for you, for me. Not just for us individually, but for us as a church, for us as a city, as the church at large. The enemy's tactic doesn't change. He wants to change our language. So here's my question to you. What language do you speak? And I'm not talking whether you speak English, German, whether you speak Spanish, whether you speak whatever it is. I'm not talking about that type of language. We see in the physical realm them speaking a different physical language, but here's the spiritual aspect of it. What language do you speak? Because we say that we're Christians, right? So what do you speak? Do you speak faith, like you trust God above all? Do you speak love? Do you speak hope? Do you speak life? Or do you speak the language of this world, which is death, which is cynicism, which is cutting, which is cold, which is hard? What language do we speak? Because the enemy's tactic is to get us to change the way that we speak. And it is really tempting and really easy because we live in a messed up, jacked up world, don't we? I mean, I just look around and go, wow, like, this world's crazy. Like, really? Do I speak life? Do I speak love? Do I speak faith? Do I speak hope in Jesus? The enemy's tactic is to get us to change the language. What the enemy wants to do is change our language. So, question, what's your language like? I mean, normally somebody's like, oh man, that means don't cuss, right? It's so much more than, oh my goodness. That's such a small drop in the bucket. What do you say? David put it this way. He said, Lord, set a guard over my mouth. The enemy's tactic is to change your language. The second is to change your learning. he can get us to spend more time learning the ways of this world than the ways of God, he knows he's won. So here's my question. How much time do we spend learning the ways of God versus learning the ways of the world? Do I really seek God? Do I spend time in his word? Am I spending time in his presence? Am I going, God, I want to be with you right now and I want to know about you? This is the tactic of the enemy for today, just as it was in Daniel's day, to change the language of believers, to change the learning, that we substitute a message, a sermon, a church service for learning who God really is. Church should be a place where we come and we're encouraged in our walk with God. It should be a place where we can encounter people who love God and point us to him. It can be a place where we can glean because we've heard something in a message, because we've read something in a Bible study. But let me just tell you, you decide how much of God you take in. The enemy's tactic is to distract you, to keep you from genuinely seeking God. Are y'all following me? Because it's real quiet. Man, I want us to recognize the tactic that the enemy had in taking these young men and putting them in a place where the language was, they were forced to learn another language. They were forced to learn a different set of values because they didn't just learn the literature, they learned the religious wisdom of the time. And then the last thing, the enemy wants to change our labels. I mean, their names were Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael. Do you know what that meant? Here's what Daniel meant. His name, every time his name was spoken, it meant this: God is my judge. Hananiah meant the Lord is gracious. Mishael meant who is like the Lord. Azariah meant the Lord is my helper. Do you know that the enemy changed their names from Daniel to Belteshazzar, which meant Bel, protect the king. Bel was a false god. Hananiah to Shadrach, which meant command of Aku, which was a moon god. Mishael was changed to Meshach, which means who is like Aku. And Azariah was changed to Abednego, which means servant of the shining one, Nebo, another false god. Let me just tell you, the enemy's tactic is to rename us in his image. There was a time when Christian was a good term. The labels have changed. To say someone in our society today, it's like, oh, they're a really good Christian. Like, some people might go, particularly those who are older, that's a positive thing. 99% of the time when it's spoken with people who are 25 and younger, it's meant to be cynical, and that means that person is judgmental and condescending. Am I correct here? Yeah. The labels are changing. Let me tell you, the tactic of the enemy is to get us to change the way that we think, to change the way that we behave, to change the way that ultimately we believe, because he's after our identity. Because the enemy took Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael and brought them to another country and was doing his very best to make them 100% Babylonian, so that they looked like a Babylonian, that they thought like a Babylonian, that they spoke like a Babylonian, and ultimately so that they would believe exactly like a Babylonian. The tactic of the enemy for you and for me is to make us look exactly like people who are light years away from serving God. So I have to ask myself the question, is my language one of love, of faith in Jesus, of life, of hope? Am I seeking God with all my heart, not just saying it? Can I truly be called a follower of Jesus? Or if people really saw me, would it confirm their cynicism? That's powerful stuff, man. I don't want to be like the guy that's a monikered Christian. That means like, oh, he's Christian in name, but not like Jesus. Because here's what the enemy's after: our identity. He wants us to look just like him. Can I just say, I really don't think in the future to come, at least in our country, that you're going to be able to easily be a casual Christian. I just don't think it's going to happen. It can be hard. If we think that, like, 1 hour a week is going to be the foundation stone of our relationship with Jesus, we're deluded, man. I know this seems really hard, but it's true. And if I want to be bold, like, man, I want to have a strong faith, then where am I placing that faith? Where am I placing my time? But there's some great news, some really good news. Regardless of where you are, you can follow God. So I looked at these guys and go, like, pretty powerful, because something happened. Look at verse 8. It says, but Daniel was determined not to defile himself by eating the food and wine given to them by the king. He asked the chief of staff for permission. I'm just going to read just a little bit. Not to eat these unacceptable foods. In verse 12, he says this, please test for us 10 days on a diet of vegetables and water. And at the end of the 10 days, see how we look compared to the other young men who are eating the king's food. Then make your decision in light of what you see. The attendant agreed to Daniel's suggestion and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, Daniel and his three friends looked healthier and better nourished than the young men who had been eating the food assigned by the king. So after that, the attendant fed them only vegetables instead of the food and wine provided for the others. And God gave these four young men an unusual aptitude for understanding every aspect of literature and wisdom. And God gave Daniel the special ability to interpret the meanings of visions and dreams. They followed God. And there was favor that was attached to it. So here's my question. What happens when we follow God? Here's what happens. I've got four things. Here's what happens when we follow God. Number one, we have to make a stand somewhere. And let me just tell you, I think that many times Christians have made the wrong stands for the wrong thing. Like, because there has been a culture world and everything related to Christendom. That's everything related to the church and its tremendous previous influence over society. Like, previously, even 50 years ago in the United States, like, the church had a tremendous amount of influence. Do you realize that? But there's been a culture war against biblical principles, against the church at large, and Christians oftentimes even individually. And I hate to say it, yet it's so true, we lost that war, guys. We've been relegated to insignificance culturally as a whole. Do you realize that? Sadly, we have. Like, the government has stepped in where we should be the hands and feet of Jesus. They've been the one that's feeding others. Where we've not reached out to people who are in need, they've set up housing. Like, that's how sad. We have to make a stand somewhere. And I think many times we've made stands in the wrong place. We've said things like, and it's true, like, I get it, I'm all about it, but like, we got it backwards, I think. Like we make the stand and the fight for, like, there should be prayer in school. Yes, there should. I'm sorry that it's not there. I wish that it was. Like, we should be able to pray before a football game. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I've got it. But, like, somehow, like, that's been, like, the brunt of where our fight's been on that end. Like, we should be able to put the Ten Commandments in front of a courthouse. Yeah, I get it. I'm with you 100%. But that's where so many times we've made the stand, and I don't know that that's the best place to make the stand. Y'all don't throw stones at me yet. Listen to me. Come on. Because Daniel and his three friends, like, they didn't make the stand about the language. Like, they learned the language. They learned Babylonian. They didn't make a stand about the learning because they learned the customs. They learned the wisdom. They even learned the religion. Get this. They didn't even make a stand about their name being changed. They allowed their name to be changed, and they allowed themselves to be called by that. But they did make a stand. in an area that they had determined beforehand that they would. That's where verse 8 is so powerful. And it's the turning point, I believe, in the whole book of Daniel. But Daniel was determined not to defile himself by eating the food and the wine given to them by the king. We have to make a stand somewhere. Here's where we make it. It's not on a platform. It's not on a political platform or a social justice platform. Those are good things. That's great. Good. I'm glad. That's awesome. Here's where we make the stand on what we take into our life. That's where we make the stand, guys. Look, I'm all about us doing the right thing and being the hands and feet of Jesus and reaching out to people. And just, I mean, I love that. I'm so all about that. I love it. I mean, we had people out yesterday. Sean and a large crew were out ministering to people in the streets of houses that are really rough. Like, that's great. Like, we feed people here every week. That's good. But here's where we take the stand. It's what we put in our heart and life. One of the greatest gifts I've ever been given was a high school graduation gift by a family I didn't even know that well, and it wasn't fancy. It was this little bitty, like, desktop inspirational thing, and it was just made out of wood with, like, this shiny black with, like, engraved gold. Y'all know what I'm talking about? Kind of hokey, like, oh, we have to get you a present. Here it is. And it sat by my nightstand all through college. It was Psalms 101:3. Says, I will set no worthless thing before my eyes. Here's where we make the stand. What we allow in. Daniel said, I'm not going to take in anything that would defile me before God. I don't want to eat that food because it's been offered to idols. It's not what we're supposed to eat. I don't want to do it because it's an offense to me, and I believe it's an offense to God. What are you taking in? Television can be used for great good or great evil. Social media can be used for great good or great evil. Even secular psychologists now say that overwhelmingly Facebook has a negative impact on people who use it for X amount of hours a day. It's not bad to have that. I'm not saying shut down a Facebook account. I'm saying make sure we take in the right things. We've all heard the adage, you are what you... Let me just tell you, we are spiritually what we take in. When you take in the presence, the power, the Spirit of God, here's what happens. The same thing with Daniel. The same thing that happened with Daniel and his three friends. Here it is. You're going to look healthier. That's why it says, hey, put us to the test. Let us try this out for 10 days. And then it says in verse 15, at the end of 10 days, Daniel and his three friends looked healthier and better nourished than the young men who had been eating the food assigned to them by the king. When you make a stand and say, I will not take in this whatever it is. Look, you can watch whatever television you want. You can go to any movie that you want to. You can browse wherever you want to go on the internet because you've been given that liberty. We can do that because we have a free country and we have a God who doesn't mandate that you behave in this manner or immediately a lightning bolt's going to come and strike you from heaven. You can do whatever you want, but I'm just telling you that if you want to make a difference and if you want to take a stand, it doesn't begin with you stepping up on a free speech area on a college campus and begin to preach. Okay, that may be well and good. That's great, except if it's not first taken place in your heart and you said, I will only put in good stuff. I'm going to chunk the junk and I'm going to put good things inside of me. It doesn't matter whether or not you step up on that box because ultimately if you put enough good stuff in for long enough, something good's going to happen. Y'all following me? When we make that stand and we say, I'm going to put in the presence of God, the power of God, I'm going to spend time putting that in and I'm going to chunk the junk, we look healthier. The second thing, we see more clearly. God gave these four men unusual aptitude for understanding every aspect of literature and wisdom. Man, you'll begin to see more clearly. That's pretty cool, that you'll see things more clearly. It's amazing. If you've never tried this, you should. If you've never shut off television and internet, even for 1 week, you should do that. Try it. See what happens. No TV, no internet for 1 week. And see if things don't begin to get a little bit clearer for you. But it's not just that. Put the right things in. When we follow God, look, we got to make a stand. But we're going to look healthier and we're going to see more clearly when we put the presence of God in our lives. Here's the last thing. When we follow God, we stand out. We stand out. We cannot help but stand out. Question, what did Daniel and those three guys, what did they do for the king to take notice of them? What did they do? Like, really? I mean, did they like write little thank you notes for, hey, thank you for bringing me to Babylon. It's been so great here. And I appreciate everything that you're doing and furthering my education. Did they send him notes? No. Did they butter up the people that had authority over them? No. What did they do? What was the only thing that they did? All they did was say, I'm just going to put good stuff in me, not junk. When we say, Lord, I will put your word in me, it makes a huge difference. Let me just tell you the greatest spiritual discipline you can ever have, and one that I'm back into full force, is memorizing scripture. Psalms 119, 105 says, thy word have I hid in my heart that I might not sin against you. That's David. I believe that you're here because you have a heart to do what God's called you to do. I believe that you're here because you do want to make a difference. Let me just tell you that we've yet to begin to see fully what God can do with a group of people right here in Lake Charles that say, Lord, I will chunk the junk. I will turn from everything that is not from you. I will speak your life, your love, your faith, your hope. That God, that I'm not going to fill myself up with garbage. Lord, I'm going to fill myself up with your word, with your presence. Lord, I'm going to believe that I'm going to walk in your power. And I'm trusting you. And I'm going to do that. When there's a group of people, heck, when there's even one person that does that, let me just tell you, it can change human history. It really can. Now, here's the thing. I believe that a lot of people have a heart to do that, and they set out to do it. And they go like, I'm going to do it. Like, I'm going to do it. And they do. And they, like, hardcore for, like, 2 weeks. And then they're like, God, this is so hard. Like, I didn't realize it because I want to go back to, like, what I was doing, and I want to go back from where I came. I mean, they had really good food at the king's table, I'm sure. His kitchen probably made some really awesome dishes. And what are they eating? Vegetables. I don't know about y'all, but like, I mean, I like vegetables, like cooked down and put them in a roux with some peas and some onions and like some sauces and stuff. Like, it's good stuff. But like, I don't want to eat vegetables and probably just plain vegetable. I don't want to eat that. Do you? All the time? Do you know how long their training period was before the king noticed them? How long? Come on, 3 years, 3 years. Look, so many times you go, Lord, I've been doing the right thing for so long. It's been like 2 weeks. I don't know if I can do it. Like, I thought that I was supposed to have boldness and like stand out. Like, I was going to get favor and people were going to see the difference. Like, I was going to see the difference. No. You're still in the 10-day trial period, baby. But when we sow seeds of faithfulness in doing the right thing, we change the world. It doesn't happen in a moment. It happens over the course of time. The book of Daniel, from when he's 12 or 15 years old, all the way until he's a very, very old man, span of almost 80 years. We're in a marathon, guys, not a sprint. We can begin making a stand simply by saying, Lord, I'll chunk the junk and put you every moment of every day in my life. That's my prayer for us today. And listen, if you're here and you've never made the conscious decision to say, Lord, I will follow you. I don't want all the junk of my past. I hate my sin and everything that I've done and everywhere that I've come from. I know it's wrong and I hate it, but today I'm choosing you. Let me just tell you, if that's the case today, you can stand up in the presence of God and know that you are his son, you are his daughter, and all it takes is you saying, God, I turn from that. I turn to you. Let's stand together. Man, chunk the junk, put the good stuff in. All they did chunk the junk, put the good stuff in. And if you're here and you've never surrendered your life to Christ and you are fully aware of all the junk that you've come from, chunk it, get rid of it, and say, God, I hate that. Forgive me. I receive you. I give my life to you, Jesus. When you do that, he makes all things new, just like we sang, he makes everything new. So prayer partners, you guys can come as we wrap up. As I say amen, we'll be dismissed. But if you need prayer, you come. If you've never surrendered your life to Christ, you come. And I don't remember if I mentioned this, but if you recently have given your life to Christ or you've renewed your faith or you're wondering what it really means to follow Jesus, tonight, 5:30, here, you should be here. It's First Steps. It's a group of people that get together. Actually, Jordan, who was up here earlier, he's leading that. Lisa and I are leading Next Steps. It's all about why we do what we do as a church and what your part is. They're 4 weeks, last about an hour and a half. It's a blast. But can I just tell you, man, honestly, the best is yet to come. The best is yet to come. If we chunk the junk and say, Lord, I'm in your presence, I can promise you this. It doesn't mean that everything's perfect as far as no difficulties, but it does mean that we can stand up and see God move and change the course of human history. Father, I just thank you for what you're doing here. And Lord, I just pray a blessing on everyone. And God, I just pray that as we follow you and we lay aside everything that we know is dishonoring to you, every area of sin, every area of selfishness, everywhere, every area of gratification of this flesh, that God, that we say, Lord, I am seeking you. I just pray that you today remind us of what the future holds, and it changes everything. God, may you use us to write the future. In Jesus' name, amen. God bless you. Love y'all. You're dismissed. Have a great day. See you guys soon. If you need prayer, you come.